Oh yeah. What's up, everybody, and welcome to episode 10 of the Sailor Jerry podcast, brought to you, of course, by Sailor Jerry Spiced Rum, 92 proof, bold and smooth as hell. My name is Matt Cothran, and I am still your host. And ladies and gentlemen, we are officially in the double digits. God damn, that feels good. Huge shout out to everybody worldwide that's been rocking with us since episode one. And just an insane amount of gratitude to the people at Sailor Jerry for letting me host this show, letting me do my thing, letting me express myself over the airwaves, letting me have these incredible, open, creative conversations with my friends, my peers, my colleagues. It just feels good, man. I'm having a really, really cool time doing this. The process of putting each episode together is really fucking cool from start to finish. You know, from conducting the interview to the monologue and the editing and getting it all together and putting it out there for people to hear. It just feels really good, man, and I know the response has been super cool, and so I just wanted to say thank you, you know, for listening, and we got a lot of cool shit coming down the pipeline with the Sailor Jerry podcast, so please continue to support, to subscribe, and to share the podcast with anybody and everybody, because that helps, man. It definitely helps. All right, what else is going on? How's everybody doing out there? Vibe check. Everybody feeling good? It's been a crazy ass week for your boy. I want to spill all the tea, but I'm contractually obligated, so I cannot. But what I can tell you is that the Bronx has a lot of amazing things in the works, ladies and gentlemen. We shot two music videos in the last week. The first one being with LA legend Estevan Oriol. If you haven't seen the Netflix documentary LA Originals, make sure you watch that ASAP. It's basically the story of Estevan and Mr. Cartoon. Mr. Cartoon, of course, the amazing tattoo artist. And Estevan is the, basically like a cultural historian at this point in the city of Los Angeles. He's known for documenting the neighborhoods, the culture, the style, the streets. Incredible, one-of-a-kind artist, photographer, videographer. Had the experience of working with him in the past, and we've known each other for a while, and bringing our worlds back together for a Bronx video. It was an absolutely incredible experience. I'm so excited to see how it turns out. I can't tell you what song it is. I can't really tell you much more than that. But just know, Bronx, Estevan Oriol, it's coming, baby. And then on top of that, we recorded another video for another song off our new record that comes out August 27th. FYI. With none other than punk rock legend Tim Armstrong of Rancid. And Operation Ivy, of course, if you want to go way back. Now, we've known each other for a long time, but we've never worked together. So this was a really cool experience for all of us, man. Big shout out to Tim, you know, for pulling the strings and making this all happen with the band. We had a really good time working together, and I cannot wait for our fans, for the rest of the world to see what we did together. It's really cool. It's punk as fuck, of course. And, you know, I'm just fortunate, man. I'm feeling so fortunate lately. You know, I mean, not only getting to create on my own, but collaborate and just be inspired and be in the same space as people like Estevan and Tim that I look up to creatively, is just a really cool feeling. You know, it's like I still trip out on that shit, you know? Like, I don't take that shit for granted. You know, it's a gift to be in the same space as those types of people, man. Those are once in a lifetime types of talents, man. They just are, you know? So, really cool experience, you know, to create and collaborate on these projects, you know, with all these artists that we got on this record campaign. But in this last week specifically, man, it was jam-packed with just awesome, awesome shit. So I'm really excited for everyone to see it. It's coming out eventually. That's really all I can say. But we got Bronx Estevan Oriol. We got Bronx Tim Armstrong. It's a beautiful thing. All right. Here's your moment of zen. It's time for episode 10. Frank Carter is a creative juggernaut with one hand holding a tattoo gun and the other a microphone. He creates his own path, shattering the standards and reinventing the rules as he goes along. In this amazing episode, we discuss the long-awaited opening of Frank's East London-based tattoo shop, Rose of Mercy. We also dive into the new Frank Carter and the Rattlesnakes record, their new single, My Town. We talk about pushing your artistic boundaries and the importance of timing and creative strategy. Now, I've known Frank a long time, and this conversation was really, really cool to have with him, because a lot of times when you've known people for a long time, or you meet through music or through something like that, you don't really have the time to have, you know, real conversations. A lot of times they're either, you know, work-based or tour-based or, you know, just kind of surface-based, you know. But I got a lot of respect for Frank, and he's an amazing artist, amazing musician, amazing tattoo artist, and I really, really enjoyed this conversation, and I hope you do too. So kick back, relax, pour yourself some Sailor Jerry, and let's go! Yo, what's up, Frank?
What's up, big man?
How you doing, man?
Yeah, all the better for hearing you, man.
Yeah, likewise, man. It's good to hear your voice, brother.
And you, man. It's been way, way too long. How are you?
I'm good, man. I'm good. It's been a crazy weekend, man. It's nice to wrap it up with a little conversation with you. I appreciate you taking the time, man.
Bro, I always got time for you. You know that.
Hey. Nice, man. So what's shaking, dude? I mean, you got, first of all, congrats on the new single, man, because it rips. It's amazing. My Town. It's awesome. How's it feel to have some new music out?
Yeah, it's good, man. It's exciting. We've been sitting on these for a while. Then we played this big show in London last year, February. And I think we were all kind of riding high off the top of that, you know? And then within weeks, we had all been locked down. And I think Dean and I just set about just writing. We just went straight to it. That was, you know, we formed a bubble straight away so that no one could get at us. We just wrote, man. We just wrote and wrote and wrote. And My Town was one of the last ones to sort of come about. He just got bored of playing guitar. So he just got on this synth and just, you know, one. And then that, the next thing I know, I was just written all the lyrics, like, you know, just five-minute thing.
Hell yeah.
You know what it's like when you get those moments where you just get in the studio, it's catching lightning in a bottle, isn't it? When it happens, you just got to be on top of it. You just got to do it. And that was it. So yeah, it was nice to, so nice to put that out.
Yeah, I bet it felt fucking good, man. I mean, it sounds incredible. And I know, so is the whole record done?
Whole record is nearly done. We wrote like 30 songs and he hacked it down to 10 in the end, which is something that we've never done. We've never had.
Yeah, damn, 30 songs?
Yeah, we never had that much music. Like, you know, we did our first album in 7 days, our second album in 14 days, and this one's taken a year. Do you know what I mean? But it's nice to have that time and just to sort of really, like, when you get, you know, songs are like, they're like, each one of them is like its own sort of monster, you know? One of them can be real strong for a long time and then you put it in the ring with another monster and it shows its true colours. So it's been nice to do that, to pit them against each other and sort of really try and understand what's, not only what the best songs are, but like what makes the best record. You know what it's like.
Yeah, man, that's super cool. And, you know, the evolution, honestly, of the Rattlesnakes is really cool, man. I was thinking about it, you know, today and just kind of going through the records. It's really fucking cool. I mean, you got Blossom, you got Modern Ruin, which, by the way, Modern Ruin is great, man. It's an awesome, awesome record. And then, obviously, End of Suffering, incredible record. So it's building, man. It's building. And the new single's so good. I was curious, you know, obviously, we know each other very well. We've known each other for well over a decade now. We've toured together. I still don't know how you and Dean are met. How did that all come together?
We actually met because I needed a website building. I think I'm still waiting for that website.
Yeah, for sure.
Yeah, he came and he loved tattoos. He obviously loved punk rock and he was in this kind of like tech metal hardcore band, but it wasn't really, I think they were kind of getting to the end of their time, you know? So he had been making me this website and I'd been paying him in tattoos, as is the way. We just ended up like, you know, one day he brought some songs to me and just said, look, I think I'm going to go out on my own. I'd love you to like give me your real thoughts on these. And I just listened to them. I was like, man, they're good. They're really good songs. Like you clearly got a skill, you know. But the one thing that I did notice was that like the lyrics were maybe like not quite there. So I helped him with those. And that was it, really. Like, we stayed in touch. You know, we write some songs together every now and again. We actually ended up writing, like, pop songs together. Because when I left Pure Love, I was just at home and I was like, I was going out of my mind, man. I just need to make music, you know. So I said to him, listen, like, why don't you come and we'll just write some pop songs together and see if we can pitch them to someone, you know. And they didn't really go very far, but they were good songs. So then I think maybe 6 to 8 months later, I'd like, you know, my daughter was here. I hadn't been in a band for over a year. When you're in that place and you're a musician, you have to create, man. So I called him up and I said, listen, I want to do this. I want to do this like punk rock thing. Just, you know, one tour, write all in my garage, just me and you. And then we'll find the players and we'll take it on the road one time. And here we are still. I tricked him. I got him.
Yeah, man. I mean, you guys have a really cool connection, man. I mean, is it like, do you guys, are you at a point now where you pretty much, are you writing together? Or is it like, does he kind of form like music kind of skeletons and send them your way? Or are you guys kind of like, you know, at this point, kind of feeding off the same vine, you know?
We're definitely on the same, yeah, we're definitely on the same tree. Maybe not on the same branches.
Yeah.
But we, you know, the roots come from the same place. So with him, he'll just write, you know, he writes riffs, he writes parts, he never writes full songs. And I will write tons of lyrics all the time, you know, whether it's a paragraph or a full song or maybe two full songs and one page, you know. So I'm just always writing. And then when we get together, I just tell him to hit me with the riffs one by one.
Hit me with riffs, Dean.
And so he'll just go through them until I get a feeling from one. And then I go through lyrics page by page to find which has got the right atmosphere, which sits well. Every now and again, it's a rare occurrence, but every now and again, I'll bring him a riff, but it's a very rare occurrence.
Yeah, are you playing instruments yet? Are you, because I'm still, I mean, we're kind of a dying breed, you know, the standalone singer. It's like I play guitar, but I would never play it in front of someone yet because it's terrible, to be honest with you. But are you playing any instruments yet?
No, I have a short neck Fender Jag bass.
Oh, you're a bass guy.
I am, yeah. I just, 4 strings is better than 6 for me. I just write like, you know, I write my lyrics with melody anyway. It's always hooked around a little melody. So I just decided that I could, maybe that was a way of me not having to find the words for a change. But turns out that the minute you start writing melodies on a bass, you just want to put words to it anyway. So it's rare, but I'm the same, man. I did one tour where I played one song I wrote about my dog. And it was terrible. I butchered it every night. So then I promised myself I'd never do that again.
Amazing, man. So I know, you know, there's a lot going on in the world. I know, obviously, the U.S. has been absolutely bonkers this last couple of years. I know it's been pretty comparative over in the U.K. Lyrically speaking, you know, going into this new record, where was your head at? Was there, is it kind of, you know, all over the place lyrically, or is there a direction to this record, or what's kind of coming out of your brain right now?
I was more all over the place on the last record, on End of Suffering. I was exploring a lot of different things there, and it was all about feeling, you know, it was all about mm-hmm. and like the difficulties of navigating them as an adult. With this record, like, it was hard not to have focus on it because we had so much time, and the thing that was happening, you know, this gigantic trauma that was happening worldwide, everywhere, every country you looked, there was no one that wasn't affected by it. With that said, Matt, like I said, we come off this tour, we sold out Alexandra Palace in London, which is like, that's 10,000 people, you know, that's like, that was a big fucking thing for us. And to walk off stage there and know that you've reached that kind of plateau in England, in the UK, like, it was hard not to have hope, you know, like, yeah. And that is what carried us through. So I think what I ended up doing was writing about, instead of writing about the problems, which is what I've done like most of my life, I tried to flip it and I wanted to make a fun record for the first time ever. So we wrote about all the things that we were missing with the knowledge that we were going to get them back, you know. I talk about it a lot, like, I talk a lot about spirit animals, yeah. My spirit animal, this record is the closest thing I could get to being the soundtrack to my spirit animal, which is the 4 a.m. East London bin fox. You know the one? I know you've seen them.
I've seen them. Oh, you
out of the Macbeth in fucking 2009 or the Old Blue Last, and you're like, you're passed out of a bus stop and you wake up and this thing is tugging at your shoe and it's a fucking fox that just doesn't look well. That's what this record is all about. It's about that, like, kind of that CD survival mode that is still a bit playful, it's a bit aggressive, but it's like, ultimately, it's like, it just wants to have fun. It just wants to live. That's the thing. When you see those foxes, they're surviving and they're scrapping about, but you can still see them shagging in the street and having a good time. Do you know what I mean?
Yeah.
So that's what we've tried to do, is like, make, it's a survival album, but it's a fucking fun one, you know?
That's good, man. I'm excited to hear it. I know what you're saying, man, because, you know, End of Suffering was, from the outside perspective, it seemed like a very personal record for you. You know, it seemed very just cathartic, but it was heavy. You know what I mean? It was heavy. And it's like, as an artist, you don't want to carry that around longer than you have to, you know? And it's like, writing that out is kind of, you know, it is what it is. It's like, it's your way of kind of purging it, you know? So I'm glad that this is more of a fun record for you, man, because you fucking deserve it, brother.
Thank you, man. I think that's, it's so true what you say. Like, our therapy is actually in the writing, you know? It's less so in the performance. The performance becomes the vessel for other people to therapize and to, like, help themselves, you know? And so with us, like, when the minute you write the song, you feel better. And then you have this kind of, this sort of down fees hanging over you that says, you're going to sing this now for the next 15 years. Like,
yeah.
Like, careful what you wish for. So I feel you. Thank you, man. I appreciate that, because it does feel like, yeah, there's only so long you can sort of beat yourself up for. Do you know what I mean? And I feel like I've turned a big corner now, and I want to enjoy living, man. I want to enjoy living. So that's what this is about.
Yeah, man, absolutely. And I think, you know, one of the things that I really admire about you as an artist is that you're not afraid to start over, man. Like, you're not afraid to reinvent yourself. You're not afraid to go down that road and to say, hey, like, you know, this is who I was, or, you know, but that's not me anymore. You know, like, I'm just going to start something completely new. And where a lot of artists are afraid to do that because they're afraid to let go of what, you know, of what they've got, you know what I mean? But it's like, I feel like that's never really held you back. And that's an amazing character trait, man, as an artist, as a human being, because it takes guts, bro.
Thank you, man. I appreciate that.
Yeah, absolutely, man. Absolutely. One of the things that I wanted to talk about too was, I think strategy is so important in the arts, especially in the music industry. And I think that a lot of people just don't really, you know, they don't think about it. They think that you just kind of go on this path and it is what it is. But it's like, I feel like there was definitely a moment, you know, with the Rattlesnakes when you guys kind of just like decided to, like, you wanted to go big with it. And it's like, I felt like that was like a conscious effort comfort musically, you know, artistically, aesthetically, everything. And I feel like you guys manifested that. And so I was wondering, one, if that was true, and two, if you could just kind of like talk a little bit about that, because I think people, whether it's, you know, younger artists in bands and stuff like that, I just think it's really important that people understand that having a strategy and having like a plan is an important part of it. You know what I mean?
I think it's everything, mate. Like the hard bit is knowing when to turn on that plan, because the best thing, like you know as well as I do, because you're an artist like me. We're not just musicians. You and I are artists. We just take the world in and we put it out in different ways, yeah? Whether that's through photography, through art, through music, whatever. We're artists. We're not just musicians. So for us, it's very difficult because you've got to take it all in and put it out in the most organic way possible at the very beginning to let this thing start with authenticity so that it's real, because real is what people get behind. Do you know what I mean? Mm-hmm. Like, yeah, sure, everyone can listen to something that's like stylized, that's been curated, that's like, that sounds nice. They will always find a reference point, you know, for what that was, where that came from. When you're trying to be real, you have to let this thing just like develop really slowly. And when it's there, when it's ready to go, that's when you need to fucking turn fire up and you've got to push. So for me, the whole first start of the band, you know, we didn't really have a plan. We'll write the music. You know, we had a fucking 12-bar blues song on that album, for fuck's sake, you know? The most violent lyrics ever, just about hating. But that was like, there was no rules to say, no, we're going to just do everything. That was our strategy for the first 2-3 albums, is just write anything, put it on the albums, let it be eclectic. But when you play it with so much conviction that it's undeniable. Do you know what I mean? Mm-hmm. It might not make sense to people, but like they will see you performing at such a rate of conviction that they won't be able to say that it's not right, because it's still real, still true, yeah? Whether they can make sense of it or not isn't going to matter, because they're going to see me hanging from the rafters. They're going to see Dean walking on the crowd playing a fucking solo. They're going to see us. It's the same with you guys, you know? You just fucking, you throw it at people at 100 miles an hour, and with the knowledge that they're not going to catch it because it's already gone through them. Do you know what I mean? Like,
yeah.
It's hit them. If you hit them, they, like Tyson says, like everyone's got a plan until they get punched in the face. And that's like, I kind of live my life like that, with the knowledge that like you can roll out on stage, and if you just fucking sell it from the heart, like no one can really ever walk away from that. So that was our strategy for the first 3 albums, right? And then it was a case of like taking a moment, taking a breath and looking at everything that we've made and trying to understand like what gave us the most joy, you know, so when we're on stage, what do we enjoy playing the most? Like, what gives us the most feeling? Obviously you get little bits from all of it, but that's why the new record is coming. You said Modern Room is a great record. Out of the 3 that we made, had the most focus. It was together. Our new record is like that, but on fucking steroids, bro. It's like Modern Room's like evil brother, but the party dude, you know, the party dude. All the fucking drugs, all the alcohol. You know what I mean? Fucking vegan sushi for everyone. And everyone, who the fuck is this guy? But I love him. And that's what we wanted to do, is like just take everything that we'd learned. When you talk, sorry, I know this is a bit of a long one, but when you talk about strategy, I think it's really important to let everyone know, particularly young artists, that your strategy should be to make as many fucking mistakes as possible as early on. Like, learn as much as you fucking can and do it unashamedly and unapologetically. Don't let anyone tell you who the fuck you should be. Just go and find out for yourself and make mistakes. Fucking Elton John didn't have a hit till his 3rd record. Do you know what I mean? How are we how are we expected to be greatness if we're not even allowed to be good? Do you know? So when you talk about, I don't know what your strategy is, but my strategy has been to like find out what doesn't work and just make a note of it and then roll on to the next thing, you know?
Yeah, absolutely. At least you know what not to do, you know? I just think it's important to just, like you're saying, like when you first start something, that's a time when you just go, you know, you just write, you're going, you're having fun. But there is such an advantage to like thinking strategically about your career, you know what I mean? Like it's so important. And especially in the music business, there's so many different ways you can go. And it's like you're saying, it's all good. Make all the mistakes. But you know, just like, I just think it's really cool how you guys, the evolution of the band is something that I think is really, really cool. You know, and I've watched you guys grow from record to record, and I've just kind of seen it all progress in a way that's just really smart and really cool, man. As a fan and as someone who knows you, it's just, it's really cool to watch. And I think, you know, a lot of artists out there could take a lot from it.
My G, My guy, we have so much to thank you for. You know that. I'm not going to sit here and blow smoke up your ass on your own podcast, but we, you know, from Rattlesnakes to the Bronx, like, it's nothing but love. Like, you gave us that first European tour, and we really went out and worked hard on that, and it meant the world to us to have that, to be given that shot so early on in our career. So, you know, I guess another part of the strategy is, like, make sure you got fucking good friends, everybody, because without Matty in the Bronx, like, Rattlesnakes might be a different story. So I owe you a few drinks, that's for sure, bro.
Hey, absolutely, man. You know, I love free drinks. You know, it's all good, man. And honestly, dude, you said European tour, and I just got so excited, man. You know, Brad's currently out here now. Our bass player, Brad, lives in Louisville, and we've been kind of doing band stuff for the first time in a long time. And it feels so good, dude. It feels so good. And so I know the feeling that you got to be going through releasing the new song and the video. And honestly, it seems like it's getting a great response. I mean, it's fucking awesome, man. So, you know, props to that. But then how are things over in England right now? Because there's a vibe here in the States. You know, we got kind of through the crazy political storm and all that stuff, and it's still a total shit show. But there's like an overwhelming, like, you can't kind of recork the bottle now. Like, things are kind of happening to where people are so excited to be getting out. A lot of people are vaccinated. Things are kind of progressing in a way where it's like you can start to see shows in the future. You know, you can start to see festivals are announcing and they're not recalling it. They're going for it. How's the energy over in the UK right now?
I think we're feeling very much the same as you guys. We've had a long, I think 1 year of this was enough. You know, we're now rolling through to two summers that we've lost. There's some shows booked for the end of the summer. I think some festivals or August and September time that are still really trying to make it happen. I really hope they come off. But I think for us, we've got a tour booked in November that I'm not allowed to tell you about, but I just did. That's what we're hoping for. We're going to go out and play up in Glasgow with Biffy Clyro, which is going to be crazy.
Oh, man. Biffy's the best.
Yeah, I know those guys, man. So they're bringing us up to Glasgow. And that's where we're going to blow off all the cobwebs. That's always going to be fucking crazy. And then after that, yeah, like a November tour in the UK and then a January, February tour in Europe, hopefully. But, it's even more complicated now with all this Brexit stuff. Because we've got all these fucking, just so many more hoops to jump through. So the government here have really fucked us, man. They've really done a number on us. So
yeah, I've heard that it's tough. Honestly, dude, it's so hard to see outside of your own yard right now because it's like, it's the same over here, dude. It's like, it's a fucking mess. And honestly, you know, you don't ever want to be someone who doesn't care, obviously, but fuck, they make it so hard sometimes to really want to care. And it's like, they try to break you down and you know that's, you don't ever want to completely detach, but dude, God damn, like, dude, politics are the worst, dude. Politicians are the worst. It's like, it's a mind numbing. It just makes you want to go crazy, man.
It's the apathy. And over here, it's like everything is run by the same people, you know? So it's so hard to get out, to step outside of that singular linear narrative. Now with the Tories, it is one of, you know, patriarchal white supremacy. It's fucking wild, man. Like, it's just, they only care about money and it's just full of greed basis. And honestly, it's pretty terrifying now. It gets to a point now where I'm like, I'm actually quite scared because my country is just becoming, like, you know, so reclusive, so xenophobic, and it's run by bigots. And so at some point, man, I'm going to break out the fucking old notebook and I'll write a real fucking scathing savage record. But for now, I'm trying to be more of a bin fox, you know.
Oh yeah, ladies and gentlemen, we're taking a quick commercial break to celebrate the fact that spring is in the air and summer is on the way, and that means backyard parties. And you can't have a backyard party without a backyard lemonade cocktail by Sailor Jerry. All it takes is 2 parts Sailor Jerry spiced rum, 4 parts fresh lemonade. Pour the Sailor Jerry in a cocktail glass full of ice. Pour the lemonade on top. Garnish with a fresh lemon. And enjoy the party. Now back to the show. Yeah, dude, it's such a crazy time in the world right now, man. It's like, I honestly still can't believe we went through 2020 the way we did. I mean, dude, the States was absolutely insane, dude, between the election, between George Floyd dying and all the crazy social injustice things going on with the police and just everywhere, dude. It was just absolutely crazy. And I know the UK has been crazy too, man. So just keep your head up out there. I know when COVID kind of first came into the scene, you know, how did you navigate that? Because like you're saying, man, you guys were crushing it. I think it was really hard for a lot of artists to kind of navigate it first. You know, it's like, I think everyone kind of went through their spell of like, you know, what is happening? How do I navigate this? And then it seems like people either, you know, found creative ways to kind of deal with it, or they kind of just pivoted. And honestly, some people didn't, you know, some people, it fucked some people up bad, man. But it's like, it's been a little bit different for everybody. How did you handle it?
Up and down. I'm finding it harder lately, to be honest, because I'm just like, I'm ready now. I'm jumping at the fucking bit to get out there and do something, do anything. But for me, it was like, I don't want to get my tiny fucking violin out, but I signed a lease for my first tattoo shop in March 2020, which is basically like the worst timing that I could have ever had. And I was trying to do the deal on that place like a good 6 to 8 months before that. And then I finally got it. And so it's been great because I had the time to like build that place, and I had the time to, you know, when we could work in there, I was working in there. And now it's up and running and it's slowly moving, but it's on its knees because, you know, most businesses fail in the first year anyway without a fucking global pandemic. So it's been rough in that sense. You know me, you know, one of the main things I have is survival instinct. So I feel a bit lucky to have had that, because if I didn't have that and I just had music, and music was taken away from me, and then the ability to socially interact was taken away from me, to see my friends, you know, like that would have been overwhelmingly negative. And I'm not sure how I would have been able to cope with that. So in a sense, signing that lease, regardless of how much money it's cost me, I kind of bought myself a safe place for me to go with my mental health and just work. Even if it was just like painting the fucking walls, you know, cleaning cobwebs, taking dusting bricks down and doing shit like that, you know. So I just feel like it's been a really difficult year for everyone. And the one thing that I keep reminding myself is that no matter how hard it's been, we are all earning something fucking amazing. That's all I can fucking think right now, is the energy that has been pushed on us and the way we've dealt with that. Like, there is going to be something beautiful coming on the horizon. And I just want to see that. I don't know what it is, but I want to be alive to see that. A lot of my friends didn't make it. You know, I've lost a lot of friends this year, you know, their own hands or the hands of other situations. And I feel I feel sadness for them that they're not going to get to experience whatever the fuck greatness we're about to witness. Because, man, you cannot walk through a life-changing event like this that happens on a fucking worldwide scale. There better be something good at the end of this.
Yeah, there fucking better be. There goddamn better be, man.
I swear, man. There'll be hell to pay.
Yeah, well, dude, you know, congratulations on Rose of Mercy, by the way, because it's like, you know, with the shop, what started as a safe place for you to go, you know, and create and kind of navigate through this, you know, is now open. You know, honestly, dude, from looking at the stuff online about it and just the site itself, I mean, it seems like it's just more than a tattoo shop. It seems like it's a safe place for artists, for creatives. And, you know, I really dig just the way you have the artist profiles on the sites and stuff like that. And it's really cool, man. And I know it's been a long time coming for you, dude. So first off, congratulations. But, you know, second off, like, now that it's open and, you know, things are kind of lightening up a little bit, at least on the you know, the shutdown scale, how does it feel to have the shop going,
man? Okay, I go in there, I know it exists in real life, it exists in the world, but I still just don't believe that it's mine. You know, I walk in there sometimes and I sit down at my desk, there's always room for me to tattoo there at any point, and I'm just in love, man. I'm in love. I feel really, really, really blessed, actually. Like, it's cute as fuck. And it's cool. And it's like, we had loads of people come through, loads of guests. And I just said to them all, like, look, you know, just do your thing. If you vibe on the space, then stay. And if you don't, like, no, it's no hard feelings. And so the team that's there are just everyone that came through and they just vibed and they wanted to stay. So it's really nice, man. I tried to just do the opposite of every tattoo shop I've ever been in. Just make something that's really lovely.
Yeah, man, that's awesome. Congratulations. And it's like, where are you at with tattoo music balance right now? Because I know, dude, I mean, it's been, I remember when you left Gallows, it was like, Frank's leaving Gallows to tattoo. What's he doing? Da, da, da. You know, and it was like this whole thing where, again, that's who you are. You're like, I don't want to do this anymore. I want to go do something else. You know, a lot of people don't have the guts to do that. You did it. And then, you know, you've been tattooing steadily, obviously, this entire time, but now you finally have your spot, man. And that's just got to feel incredible. And that's, you've been tattooing for what, like over 15 years now, right?
Yeah, exactly. 15 long years. And it's like, I've touring took me to a lot of tattoo shops, you know, tattooing sort of like open doors to friendships with musicians. So the two go hand in hand. Look, you can't have punk rock without tattoos, bro.
This is true.
They go hand in hand. And so for me, I just feel lucky that I've been able to like find that so early in my life, both those things so early in my life. You know, because before I was 20, I was doing both of those things. And then I've just nurtured them. I'm 37 now. 17 years of punk rock and tattoo madness all over the world. And I've got my own little hub now. And it's cute, man. Like, it's a cute shop. We've got great landlords. We've got great... The next door neighbour is a pie and mash shop. Do you know what I mean? You can't get any more East London than that. Like, it's cool. It's on Hoxton Street, which is the home to the Macbeth. You and I have played gigs there. Do you know what I mean?
Like,
it's just good history. And I've got that place now for a long time. So I hope that I can really bring something to the neighbourhood. And most importantly, the thing I'm most excited about is being able to give a platform to young artists who I believe in, because I know how hard it is to get like your start in the world. And so the team that I've got there now is like really exciting. They're doing really, really great things. They're all different and they're all pushing the boundaries, and they're making like, they're just great, great young tattooers, man. It's good to be around them.
It seems like you are the type of artist who really like, you enjoy your own original designs, you know what I mean? Which I really like your aesthetic, and I like that you challenge yourself as an illustrator and as an artist to come up with new pieces, you know, where a lot of, you know, stuff in the tattoo world, you know, from someone who's not deep in it like myself, but from just an outsider perspective, a lot of it is a lot of amazing traditional designs that have been done over and over again. And it's cool to see you kind of pushing your own boundaries that way in creating your own designs. Is that something that you purposely do to kind of push yourself? Because it seems like you try to do more of your own work than you would try to do someone else's. You know what I'm saying?
Yeah, absolutely. Like, I have a fairly extensive knowledge of traditional tattooing. You know, I've got my collection of flash is like a fucking museum. You know, I picked up good pieces along the way. But when I sit down and I draw traditional tattoos, there are so many people doing it. And there are so many people doing it in a way that's like, it's just fucking good. They execute their technical ability is perfect. And, you know, their tattoos look flawless. And that's not really for me, man. Like, my favorite tattooer in the world is Theo Mindell, like from Spider Murphy's and Sam Raffelt. Like, he took everything that he'd learned, everything that he had taken from old traditional tattoos, and he applied his new style to it. And then he made this new gold standard for traditional tattooing. And so many people now just take from him. And so I tried to do the same thing, in the sense that I would take all the things that I like, learn the abilities of drawing a good tattoo, which I learned from people like Steve Boltz and Bert Crack, Mike Wilson, Eli Quinters, you know, Theo, everyone in England, from Thomas Hooper to Ian Flower, like Alex Renke and Chad Kepler, like all these guys, right? Take all that stuff and then just apply it to things that were important to me. So for example, you know, I'm a kid from the suburbs, you know, like I'm just outside of London, but I spent my whole life growing up in the Dome in Tufnell Park and places like that. So to me, it's important to have those things that speak to me. So the other day I just drew a pigeon with a, you know, the plastic rings from a six pack of beer around its neck, because that's the kind of shit I see in the street. And that's London to me. That's like, you know, I drew a Nokia 9210 the other day because that's the burner phone that I had when I was a kid. Like, I don't know, you just got to be constantly flipping it on its head. There's enough traditional tattoos out there, man. They're all better than me, so I may as well just carve my own little part out, you know?
Yeah, man, I respect that immensely. And I think that's the way to go. I mean, honestly, it's like, it feels original. It feels, you know, genuine. You know what I'm saying? Which I think is key. And the way you kind of balance between tattoos and music, for me, I think a lot of it comes out in your lyrics, because they're very visual, but they're also very personal. You know what I mean? And it's like, I feel like the personal side comes from the punk rock side, but the visual side, you know, comes from the tattoo side. You know what I mean? Because it's like you paint a picture as well as like just kind of bleeding out all over the page, you know? So how important, first of all, are lyrics to you? You know, because I know melody is also important. From my end, I feel like lyrics are super important for you, because it seems like you just put a lot into them.
This is it, man. When I was young, all I wanted to be was an artist. The only skill I had was drawing. I did not excel. I'm not academic. Like, I'm terrible with like maths and science and shit like that. I could draw real well, and I loved drawing. I used to love just getting lost in that. And then, so I always thought that tattooing is what I would do. And then I discovered words, and words, you can just, like you said, you can paint a picture with words. You can literally just write and describe whatever the fuck it is you're seeing. And you can bring so many things to life without having any real reference point. And you can put it to people as you see it without ever showing it. And then they see it in a whole new way. And I think that's a really beautiful thing. So for me, I locked onto like English and art as a kid. And lyrics are, yeah, they're integral. And now it's what's nice now is that maybe when I was young, I was writing lyrics to paint the pictures of the things that I hadn't seen. And now I'm using the things that I've seen in tattooing to reference my lyrics, you know, to like make it easier to people. So every song that I write now, I end up drawing a sheet of flash based on it. You know, it's just full of visual moments that make sense. So yeah, so like my town has got like, I drew a wheelie bin flash the other day. So I don't know who the fuck's going to get that tattooed on them, but I don't really care because it's funny. And it's like, you've just got to keep pushing these things. It's like anything can be a tattoo. And every tattoo that you've ever seen is kind of the start of like the best love song you've ever heard, really, probably.
Absolutely, man. And that video for my town is amazing. Did you guys have a good time putting that together? It looked like it.
I got to tell you, right? When you talk about Dean as being like, you know, he's an integral part to his band. This motherfucker, right? He produced the whole album, okay? So he wrote all the songs with me. He produced the whole fucking record. He was in the studio every day, like way longer hours than me. I think I was there maybe 10% of the time he was. It's crazy. And then he directed that video. And his design company, Yuck, did all of the fucking visual graphics. So he did the whole thing. Like, it's insane to me when you think about that. Like, okay, this guy is, he's a fucking rock star one minute. Then he's like the head of this design company. Then he's a director. Oh, now he's a producer as well. And I just sort of think like, man, what the fuck has happened to this kid? What is he trying to prove? He is fucking like, we talk about high function. He's the Elon Musk of the punk rock world, man. Like, I just feel lucky he's on my side. I would not want to be against him.
Yeah, really. Shout out Dino, man. He's the fucking man. And he's a great guy too. You know, above all that creative talent, he's a fucking stand-up dude. Shout out to Dean for sure. And you know, it's crazy too, man, because videos are a trip because, you know, you get wrapped up in it and it can like suck the fun out of it. And the thing I love about the video is it just looks like you guys are having a blast, which is like the key thing. You know what I mean? Because that shows through, it translates, it puts a smile on everybody's face. So fucking job well done. Yeah, man. So one thing I wanted to talk about is the evolution of your voice, man, because, you know, obviously we are singers amongst other things. And when you started out, I feel like we were pretty similar in a way. It was all about just a nuclear bomb of self-expression. And it wasn't really, you know, it didn't really matter how good you sang or what key you were in. It was just about demolishing everything that was in your radius. And somewhere along the way, you know, song by song, album by album, your voice has always just had an amazing attitude, tone, everything. But man, you have become a great singer. And it's like, I was just curious, was there a moment when you kind of embraced that side of being a frontman, being a musician? Because usually, you know, it takes like a little bit of understanding to kind of on your own path to figure out like, okay, you know, I'm going to take this seriously, or, you know, I'm going to try to step out and try to do something different with my voice. How have you evolved that way as an artist?
Like, that's been the hardest bit for me to do. Is I had a great singing voice when I was a kid, you know, and then I hit puberty and it just was gone. Overnight. And you just sort of think, well, hang on, what the fuck? Like, that ain't fair. Like, that's me, you know, that's in there somewhere. I've just got to learn to train it. And when I was in Gallows, you're right, it didn't matter. It was more about the presentation. You know, it was just fucking, as long as I was spitting at people and as long as I was bleeding at the end of the gig.
Yeah.
It was just like, the point was across. When I left Gallows and started Pure Love, that was the first time I really sit, my singing was on the table, you know, and it got fucking torn apart. It got scrutinized. And I think that's kind of what I was saying earlier about, you know, make failing, you know, putting yourself through those moments where you get to learn.
Mm-hmm.
And when we came into Rattlesnakes, it, you know, I was a bit freer. I didn't care as much. So I sort of stepped in and out of that zone, of that range. But honestly, Matt, like, I got a vocal coach this year, like last year and this year, to work on this album. Her name is Lorna Blackwood. She coaches Dua Lipa and so many amazing artists. And she has been fucking integral. You know, she would sit down with me and she would say, look, you're a great singer, but like, it's not there. Like, you're not showing the world what you're capable of. And you've got like, she's like, you use all of your low and all of your high and none of this middle range, of which you have loads, but it's just not there. It's just not, you're not practiced. You've not exercised it. It's like having this insane like muscle set that you've just never really engaged with. And so she has just brought like my entire mid range out, bringing my full set of lower, and it's changed the way I fucking sing entirely. And it saved my voice as well. When you're in a young punk band, man, the last thing you want is to like lose the connection with the crowd. So you ignore, you know, in-ear monitors, like the plague, up the fucking amps, you crank up the side fills and the monitors, and you just get your head in it all. And you fucking end up with your head in a fucking 24-inch crash cymbal for your life. And then you wonder why at 35, like there's this constant ringing in your ears, you know? And so for me, when I got to writing and the suffering, she was in the studio all the time, like just hanging out. She's the wife of the guy that produced it, Cam Blackwood. And she would give me these little tips and hints, but never really like anything major, you know, just like little moments for me. And then when I came out and we started writing this, I was like, I really feel like I need to go and see her. And fucking hell, man, it's been this night and day now.
Yeah, I'm excited about that. And I'm stoked for you because, like I said, I think you got a great voice. And I've been stoked just to hear it evolve over the years. And like, I can't wait to see what the new record sounds like with some vocal lessons and more. I mean, it's not even really lessons is the wrong words. It's more just like coaching on using your voice. Because I mean, your voice is your voice and it's a good one, you know? So it's like, I'm excited to hear what she's brought out, man. It's going to be fucking great.
It's developed. And that's all we can do as artists is just try and constantly evolve and develop. And it's in a place now where I'm fucking excited to show the world what I have now because I feel good about it.
Hell yeah, man. And you know, when the time does come to tour again, you know, I know Rattlesnakes have just demolished Europe over and over again. What are some of your favorite places to play, to travel? You know, obviously we need you back over here stateside as soon as both of our governments can pull their heads out of their ass and the world gets better, obviously. Where, you know, what are some of the places that you love to play?
When you look at Europe, there's just so much there in that whole area. France has been particularly good to us. I think that really stems back. You know, we had a call. Do you remember? We had a call really shortly after the Bataclan, the incident in the Bataclan. And you called me to say, listen, we're still coming. We're going to do this thing. And every band, every single band at that time was canceling their tours in Europe without fail. I think that tour that we did, we were one of the only bands on the road at the time. 2 weeks after that thing or a month after that thing. And because of that, Paris has just, we can go there and it's literally like being in London. It's fucking crazy, man. Like they will never forget that. And people need music, you know, like we can't like to not go is to allow them to win. And so I think that was one of the most important decisions that you guys have ever made. And we were really thankful that you made it. And we were really excited to get back out on the road with you then. So France has always been amazing. You know, Germany, I mean, Copenhagen, we go there and we play and it's like fucking wild. Mm-hmm. But then, yeah. America, man, we have not done enough in America, and I lived there for 5 years. You know, it's like a home from home for me. So I'm just desperate to get back out and do that big fucking 8-week tour.
Yeah, man. Oh my God, that sounds so good. Yeah, you know, I gotta say, France is such an amazing place. Paris, especially, and it's like, man, when we first started going there, it was like I think there was still kind of it was like a lot of like techno, hip hop side of things, and rock and roll really came around. You know, there over the last 10, 15 years, something like that. But it just obviously with the Bataclan, it just got so heavy. For obvious reasons, and being able to be a part of that healing energy, you know, was such an amazing honor, you know, to be able to be amongst, you know, the amazing people of Paris. And, you know, we have mutual friends there that are just diehard music fans. And, you know, that is just, it's just an amazing city, an amazing place. Man, I can't wait to go back to Europe, dude. I love Europe. So much. I cannot wait. Can't wait to go back to Scandinavia, you know, to Sweden and all that shit, man. They love that rock and roll. They love punk rock up there, man. It's the fucking best.
You're talking about this stuff and I'm salivating. How the fuck does that even happen? Like, I'm like a dog that's about to get a bone. I'm like, give me... these stages. God damn it, man.
Yeah, man. Absolutely, brother. Well, listen, I don't want to take too much more of your time, man. It's been awesome catching up with you. You know, I just wanted to see, you know, you're getting that age now, man. You said you're 37, right? You got a new record, almost done. You know, at this point, you've done Gallows, you've done Pure Love, and then, you know, obviously you've hit your stride with the Rattlesnakes, and Diener is the fucking man, and you guys are just creating, you know, quality art. You got the tattoo shop finally open. It's been a fucking insane journey to get to where you're at now. But are you able to, you know, at this moment in your life, feel some sort of joy and gratitude for it all, and kind of where are you at overall with your life right now? Are you feeling good? And where do you want to go? Where do you see what's next?
I'm really happy, man. I feel happy. I feel excited. My daughter is 6. She's teaching me more about the world than I can learn on my own. It's been up and down. It can be a real struggle if you let it be that way. But, you know, listening to you sort of relay my accomplishments to me, there's a lot there, you know, there's a lot there. And what I'm trying to do this year is just slow down and appreciate what I have. I've spent a lot of time hungry, you know, constantly. Yeah. I'm in the next mountain. The minute I get to the top, I'm like already on my way down the other side to get up the next one. And so for me, I'm going to sit at the top of this mountain for a little bit, enjoy the view before we set off again. But trust me, I will set off again. That's the nature of the explorer, isn't it?
I know you will, man. I know you will. We'll all be there to watch it. Watch you in all your glory, my man. Frank, thank you so much for taking the time, brother, to have this conversation with me, to be on the Sailor Jerry podcast. Nothing but love for you. Congratulations on the shop. Congratulations on the new tune, the new record coming out eventually. Give all my love to the band. Have a good day, brother. Have a good week, man. It's great talking to you.
Be blessed, my friends. Be well.
All right, G. Peace.
Later.
Oh, yeah, ladies and gentlemen. That's officially a wrap on episode 10 of the Sailor Jerry podcast. As always, huge thanks to our special guest, the one and only Frank Carter. You can follow him on one of his many numerous Instagram platforms. You got Frank Carter 23. You got And the Rattlesnakes. And you got at Rosa Mercy for the tattoo studio. Thank you so much, Frank, for the awesome conversation. Really great catching up with you. Of course, you can also follow at Sailor Jerry, at 213 Mattman. And you know Sailor Jerry spiced rum is made the old school way. 92 proof, bold and smooth as hell. Peace!